Here we go. This is John Curley's Sherry Elliker Show, starring Sherry Elliker and Mary Tyler Moore.
All right.
Still there? Still there?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes
I'm
I worry that
say...
you're just like, because it, you know, it's late where you are, you're out eating peanuts somewhere or just not paying any attention.
Yeah, I just fell asleep for a minute and came right back.
I like when we get the video cameras again. That was fun. Dive in.
I was.
Try to find a fun song to bring Todd Myers in, so I found this.
We're no strangers to love.
It's Greta Thunberg and Never Gonna Give You Up.
Come if that's what I'm thinking of. Get this wrong.
That yells at adults about them stealing her future. Greta Thunberg and Never Gonna Give You Up. Todd's not gonna... Okay, enter ticket down. Or
wow.
Todd's not gonna come on.
Yeah, he's not gonna like that.
Todd, public relations professional, director there, takes care of anything environmental at the Washington Policy Center, often described as a small think tank. That doesn't seem fair, Todd.
I don't know. We're not so big, and I would just say I'm the last person in the world to criticize anybody else's singing.
Okay. By the way, Todd Myers has been on Dory's show. He's been on this show as well. I want to get you on a regular basis. And when people always say, he's from a think tank, oh, he's conservative, oh, he's a flat earther. Here's what you have said. I think you still stand by this. This is about climate change. Climate models indicate that the impact of current CO2 concentrations on the climate is slight. And within the noise level in the data, in other words, according to the climate models, we are at levels in which it is hard to distinguish the CO2 impacts from natural forces.
That is currently true, yes. In the future, you will be able to distinguish it. But currently, it's very hard to distinguish what the climate signal is from the noise.
I got it. And I've said to you over numerous beers and dinner, why is it that it just seems like the stuff comes from the government and then the media just reports it and then the headline is hottest day ever or we are in huge trouble? Or, for instance, the story that comes up almost every single year, it seems like, is the snowpack in the state of Washington.
Well, because people have a predetermined sort of narrative. And so what they do is they look for evidence of that narrative. Mm-hmm. And they don't look at the data in total. They just try to find things that reinforce their biases, and everybody does that, but if we want to make good policy and want to follow the science, well, we really shouldn't.
I see. So you think there's a natural bias within the person that's reading the press release and then putting it in the paper. So let's talk about the snowpack in the state of Washington. Get ready for a great question from Sherry. It's often, to me, if you ask the average person on the street, you would think that it's dire and that we're in big trouble, that we don't have enough snowpack.
Yeah, and this has been around for a while. So I remember in 2005 when Greg Nickels was mayor, we had a very low snowpack year, and he did an interview with the Seattle Times where he said, I realized we're never going to have normal snowpack again. And just in 2020, the Washington State Legislature actually passed some CO2 reduction targets. And one of the things they cited was the fact that we were losing snowpack already. That was evidence that we were already seeing the impact of climate change. So this has been a narrative for some time that Washington State is losing all of its snow.
And?
We are not. In fact, there is the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, tracks snowpack, and for 13 of the last 16 years in Washington State, we have been above normal. And if you start looking at in about 1980, the trend in snowpack is upward, which you would not expect. What you would expect is due to see a growing climate signature as temperatures are going up. And in fact, we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing snowpack increase. Now, that doesn't mean that climate change is a hoax or wrong. I don't believe that. But it does mean that we should be very careful about the predictions that we make, and we should make policy based on, you know, real data rather than just sort of ideological biases and making assumptions.
your question for Todd, Sherry, one of your great ones?
I'm going to steal a question, actually, because being that snowpack is not one of my topics that I know a whole lot about living on the East Coast. This is from the article that you wrote in Clark County Today. And someone wrote in, and this is an interesting opinion, and I'm just wondering what you say about it. Somebody named Brian wrote in and said that in the last decade, in average, the snowpack has gone a month earlier than the 20-year normal. So we are getting more snow, yet it has gone a month sooner. What does that tell you? Last year was one of the worst droughts on record. So what do you say to that, that it's sort of evening out a little bit, or that it seems to be not as you might have presented it here?
I say that he is wrong. So you can check the data, right? It would be concerning if you were getting more snowpack in the middle, but then it was melting earlier, and that would leave us with less water. But in fact, what the USDA data, so they update what they call their normal every decade, and it's based on the previous 30 years. And what we saw with the brand new normals that they just redid is that in most of the parts of Washington State, the final snow melts later, about one day later than it did previously. The claim that he is making, which is that it's 1 month earlier, you could only get that result if you start in the 1950s. And you will see a lot of these claims that start in the 1950s about snowpack. The reason that they start in the 1950s is that the 1950s was the snowiest decade of the last century. So basically any line you draw from the 1950s would be downward. But like I said, actually in recent years, the snowpack has been in the other direction.
Yeah.
Precisely the moment when you would be expecting us to lose snowpack because temperatures are getting warmer.
Yeah, so it all depends on where you start the line from, where you begin. And not cherry picking, but you have to start somewhere. So you do that to give yourself the most amount of snow to start with. By the way, Sherry, Todd was the guy that helped me get the only thing I ever really got done at Sammamish City Council. I got plastic bags banned because of Todd. And I fought that. I was ready to die on or suffocate, or I don't know how a plastic bag would kill me on that one. That was
you stopped the bag ban.
I stopped it because of you. Yes, I stopped it. Issaquah still kept they went to the bag ban, but I was able to use all of Todd's science and everything else to explain why plastic is better than either one of those choices, of the three choices of cotton or paper or plastic. And it was like I triumphant. And I had to keep giving credit to Todd Myers, but I kept calling him Todd Meyer. And then some guy goes, you know, his last name's Myers.
Well, Todd, I'm wondering, why are people so quick to believe everything they hear about climate change? It seems like, you know, they aren't really willing to take the time or have the patience to listen to the science that might contradict what's being told to them all the time about this. Is it just that we're lazy, or we're just too willing to believe it? I mean, what do you attribute that to?
So I am a geek and I have no life, but most people are not like me. Most people have lives. And so they don't spend their time looking at the data because they would rather spend it with their family and their friends and their children, things like that. Mm-hmm. So they rely on people telling them, hey, this is a concern and here's what's going on. And they don't know where to get the data. And a lot of it is in just a simply intuitive sense, right? Temperatures are going up. We see that. So it would make sense that snowpack is getting lower. But another thing is happening also, which is that we're getting more precipitation. So because we haven't seen temperatures go up very much, the more precipitation is outweighing the more temperature. So that, I think, is the problem. The other challenge is that politicians love to hype up concerns, and so they create a lot of hype so that they can support the policies that they want. And so it's hard to know what's real and what's hype when people are constantly being bombarded. And given a choice between looking at the data and having a drink with their family, they make the correct decision.
Well, we depend on nerds like you. Todd Myers is has had people come after him all the time. I mean, did they say terrible things to him? He's a flat earther and everything else. Todd, in a fun way, Sherry, will say, okay, I'll tell you what, prove to me where I'm wrong. Show me the data that I'm wrong, and I will send you, what was it, $20?
I usually bet $50. So sometimes people will tell me that I'm wrong about this or that. And you know, sometimes I will push back, but oftentimes, you know, fighting with people doesn't work out very much. They simply don't believe it.
Yeah.
So I offer to bet people. And very rarely do they bet, but when they do, I have never lost a bet.
How about that, Sherry, huh?
pretty impressive.
He's lonely. He has no friends. Well, he has a bit of a wife for some reason. But he's a nerd who still has $50 in his pocket.
Are you worried at all, Todd, about the claims that climate change is the single biggest thing plaguing our youth, that they are just driven they have so much anxiety over it? Do you buy that?
I worry about it. I do see it. I do see people worried about it and too much anxiety. Here's the thing. Climate change is real. There is a real threat. We need to address it, and there's ways that we can address it.
Yeah.
But it's not catastrophic. And in fact, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is the UN agency that looks at the impacts of climate change, does climate modeling, economic modeling, and under all of their models, even the most serious ones, finds that our economy will be better in the year 2100 than it is today, under any of the scenarios, and much better in developing countries. So it is something to worry about. It is causing harm, but the lives of young people today will not be destroyed by climate change. They will actually be wealthier.
Well, you got to convince this gal right here.
There is no planet B. There is no planet blah. Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah. And Todd? Todd.
Yes.
Thank you. No strangers to love. Todd Myers, Washington Policy Center. Oh, boy. Oh. Thank you, Todd, for coming on. He described it. I said, so explain to me as simply as I can. And I try to explain this to the people on the air. He said, it's like this. You're in a car and you're going down a hill with a car. You're pressing down on the gas. Now, how much of the acceleration of the car is gravity and how much of it is your foot on the gas? That's the same thing with the climate change and the heating. How much of it is CO2? How much of it is man-made and how much is it natural? That's the thing. You try to separate those two. I love how you put those two into perspective and, allowed me not to win $50 but to win one argument anyway. Going through, this is where apparently in the show now we talk about everybody who's died. I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. No, I won't do that. That's Meatloaf drawing the line of what he'll do for love, Sherry.
He won't do that.
And yeah. The mind reels. I sang this one in the car with a girlfriend who then broke up with me. I know the lines of this one.
Did she ask you to pull over and she got out?
Right about here. Put my hazards on. So Meatloaf passes away, and the same day we lose Lonnie. Is that what happened?
Louie Anderson, not Lonnie Anderson. Lonnie's still with us.
Trifecta. Louie Anderson goes. Every once in a while, you end up having two people die on the exact same day. Like, for instance, Farrah Fawcett and Michael Jackson both died on the same day.
I didn't know that, really. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And poor Farrah just got lost in the whole mix of the whole thing, and no one ever knew. Same thing with Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher, both dying in the same day. Certain stories. So in this case, I don't have any music from Louie Anderson.
Well, Louie, of course, was a comedian, and he died of cancer. This was something I found kind of morbid but interesting. He was one of 11 kids in his family, but it says he's only survived by two sisters. So it sounds like everybody in his family has died, or all of the brothers and sisters, for the most part, have died in his family.
Wow, look at you, really bringing the whole segment down.
I can do math on that, but nothing else.
Yes. Well, The oldest woman, this is again the dying segment of the show. I think you can probably tell that. Here she is, 110.
Thelma Sutcliffe is spending her Tuesday going through a basket of birthday cards. She just celebrated her 110th birthday on.
What, was she 110 when she died, or this is
115? 115.
Wow, this is five. Yeah. We don't. No one's updated her since this.
Saturday. Yeah. This durable lady was born in 1906 in the Benson neighborhood, long before Benson was part of Omaha and Teddy Roosevelt was president. She credits working hard to her longevity.
I was born and raised on a farm where the Omaha Country Club is today. That's.
Oh, okay.
Where our farm was.
What kind of farm was it?
Well, they had, at least we did, 160 acres of all kinds, raised everything.
But she also says it's good genes.
But my sister lived also to be 106. But my sister and myself, neither one of us smoked. Now, whether that had something to do with it, I don't know.
One thing is for sure, Thelma Sutcliffe is sharp. She loves her weekly bridge games, reading, and doing her daily crossword.
That came from the neighbors.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't listen anymore.
She also said that never smoking, this is what she attributed to her long life, never smoking, never worrying about anything, and never having kids.
Really?
Never had kids. I like the way that reporter called her durable. Isn't that your goal, to have somebody eventually call you durable?
My father's term for women was well-preserved.
Well-preserved. Handsome.
That's when the woman has a little more hair in her chin than she can handle in a single week. So this lady guy, she passes at 115, and Louis Anderson, as you pointed out, another death there, and then Meatloaf. So
right, and Lonnie Anderson's still alive.
Yes, thank you for that. By the way, I think Lonnie Anderson married a local guy.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure on that one. And hopefully they're all still alive as well. But it's always hard to interview old people because you never know what to do, what question they're, you know, are you supposed to answer? What kind of farm did you have? I mean.
Well, and all the questions are so predictable, right? You know, what do you, how come you've lived so long, and what's your advice for people, and what's your secret, you know?
Yeah. I had a woman come up to me. I was shooting Evening Magazine. She was like 100 years old. I want to play the harmonica. I was like, I'm in the middle of the show. I'm going to play the harmonica. He's like, well, I'm kind of shooting a show right here. I'm going to play it right now. I was like, okay. And with that, she just launched into it, and I thought she'd be like, boop, 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 boop. And her teeth would fall out, and she just kept going and going and going. I actually have it on video somewhere.
And she'll be writing the next letter song.
Couldn't stop her. There we go. Looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to the WKRP.
Because of the following special program,
no.
WKRP in Cincinnati and Lou Grant will not be presented this evening.
Back to back, they wiped them both out.
I love Lou Grant.
That was a show, Lou Grant?
Yeah, don't you remember? Lou Grant was the salty, like, news director kind of guy.
Oh, I know who he was. He's like, get out of my office! And it, Lou? Right, but Lou? Then he had his own show?
Yeah, he had his own show where he was a newspaper guy.
Oh, okay.
Same basic character.
I get it.
Yeah.
Glad it was. Well, we're not going to see it tonight. Bucky's Auto Service Centers, they got 16 locations. They've been around for 51 years. That's a good long time. They know exactly what they're doing. The men and women there at Bucky's can't wait to get that car of yours and get in there. They lose sleep at night thinking, what's making that clicking sound? What's making that clicking sound? What's making that clicking sound? I didn't say it was interesting. I just said that's where they lose sleep over night, thinking in the car. All right. Can anyone explain why Joe Biden does the whisper? This lady that they asked, she was so sympathetic to it. Joe Biden's whisper thing is this weird thing he does now.
What do you say to those teachers and principals and parents about school closings? And what can your administration...
By the way, I'm anxious to hear what your theory is on this one.
...we should do to help make up for learning loss for students?
First of all, I put in perspective the question you asked. Very few schools are closing.
He gets in close to the microphone.
Over 95% are still open. So you all phrase the questions when people, I don't think it's deliberate on your part, But you phrase the question, many boy watches this on television. My God, there must be all those schools must be closing. What are we going to do? 95% are still open.
Spooky, weird. Associated Press asked for a communication expert to weigh in, and she said it's...
I think it's time to give ordinary people a tax break. The wealthy are doing fine.
I'm thinking about the iterations of the whispering I've seen on film. It does look a little bit like a Saturday Night Live skit because you can see how frustrated he is, or it gives the appearance of being frustrated, right? Mm-hmm. And so that breaks the fourth wall, if you will, of the presidency to see what a president really thinks.
I got them $1.9 trillion relief so far.
That was a good one. That one, he did that one. He really leaned in hard on that one. Yeah.
I think there's something about the whispering that not only shows the frustration, but also suggests that, you know, that the impossibility of bringing something into a smaller group at this point, that's why it's funny too. Like, do you think you can whisper right now and people aren't going to notice that, or it's going to make the conversation truly off the record or more intimate? Because in fact, it might have the opposite effect, which is drawing more attention.
I wrote the bill on the environment. Why would I not be for it?
He has.
If you want someone to pay attention, whisper. I think it was a commercial. Wasn't that like a perfume commercial a long time ago? If you want to make some people listen, whisper. Joe, I think, well, you tell me why you think the president does the whispering thing.
I think it is because he's trying to get your attention. Like, if you're in a meeting and everybody's talking at this level, if you talk a little bit lower... Yeah. Everybody is forced to listen a little bit closer. I don't even know that it's that conscious with him. Like, I'm not even sure that he knows he's doing that. But I think that's his way. It's just emphasis. It's just his way of getting his point across. Either that, or he's just really old and he thinks nobody can hear him. Hey, come here. Let me tell you something. Come on. We're the only one in the room, right? Yeah, just us.
I'm going to say it is because he is... he's frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's frustrated. And rather than yelling, rather than raising his voice, he decides he's going to go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why he does it. And they work with these guys on these different things. If they find something that's not polling well or it's annoying or whatever, I do believe that he does the whisper when he starts to get mad because he doesn't like the question or they're putting it in a perspective that he's pushing back against. My brother told me that Walter Mondale, when running for president, he had a bad habit of pointing, and he would always point. And they said, when you point with your finger, your index finger, it makes you look small and didactic and pedantic. And you don't point. So take that index finger and curl that back in, get that back in and put your thumb over it so you won't, so you can gesture with your hand out like Clinton used to do. Clinton would take his thumb and do like fists. Fists are much better than a point. Point makes you look small, right? And Chuck said that he noticed, because Walter Mondale used to come into this video store that Chuck worked in DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C., when he was running for office, and the Secret Service would come in first, and then Walter Mondale would come in. He said Walter was a really, really, really nice guy. And he told Chuck about the fist and the hand and the knuckle and the thing. And then he said, and one day he was watching some speech, and he saw the finger come flying out. And a week later, because he used to go to the video store like once a week, remember that? People would go all the time. Walter Mondale came in, and Chuck said, hey, I saw your finger. He goes, Chuck, I couldn't stop it. I got so angry. It just came flipping out like a knife. I was just trying to make a point, and I couldn't hold my index finger back. So they do try to work with these guys on different annoying habits that they might have. But this Joe Biden whispering thing, it's just weird anyway.
If you want to capture someone's attention, whisper. If you want to capture someone's attention, whisper. Nuance Perfume by Coty speaks as softly as a whisper. Nuance lasts and lasts, yet is so exquisitely delicate that it draws people closer, like a whisper.
Okay, now that's just annoying. Okay, you made your point
whisper
in the very...
to me. If you want to capture someone's attention...
Okay, no,
whisper.
We don't. No, we don't.
Whisper to me.
No.
If you want to capture someone's attention, whisper with Nuance.
Was the commercial? Nuance commercial? Nuance was the perfume?
I have two different Nuance commercials that both have the same whisper gimmick.
I think that's all we basically have made our
we
point.
We kind of get the point.
Very hard to sell.
Thank you.
Very hard to sell.
often as provocative as a whisper.
And you're telling me like that again.
Stop playing it.
Very hard to sell perfume on television.
That's true.
Okay, Sherry, don't make this part of your thing now. All right. All right, here we go. Sort of a mishmash of a show on a Friday as news begins to slow down after the president's press debacle that he had, and now the big news is happening now in the Ukraine regarding what America is supposed to do. I think our people over there talking to Putin right now, or at least people close to Putin, to decide whether or not we're going to let him have a little incursion into parts of the Ukraine. And other than that, things have kind of slowed down. You get that sort of sense as we're moving into the doldrums, Sherry, of the news cycle, other than houses falling down?
Yeah, I mean, January is usually kind of a not a big newsy month, right? We're coming out of the holidays.
Yep.
It's winter. People are hibernating a little bit more. Last year, we were so inundated with the pandemic and being shut down and all of the chaos that was going on. I think we didn't have time to absorb any kind of, you know, frivolous things or things.
Well, maybe we can make it this entire show without mentioning COVID. I don't know if we'll be able to do it or not. But I did find this for you, talking about that 115-year-old lady who was being interviewed by that woman when she was 110, and then you talked to her about, like, what kind of farm was it and how much fun it is talking to older people. This is the lady that just walked up while I was shooting the show, and Daryl and I used to try to shoot the show like it was live. We never wanted to take a break, just blast right through and leave all the mistakes in, because it was easier and then we could go to get lunch sooner.
Welcome back, everyone. The nice thing about shooting EV Magazine outside every single day, not just in some studio, is the fact that anybody can just walk up, and we love to put people on television without any sort of rehearsal or anything, Mabel. That's what makes it fresh and exciting. Mabel, who's 81 years old, from Marysville.
89.
Little lady. She's like 3 feet two.
Mm-hmm.
89.
Okay. All right.
You
can talk later about correcting me on the air while I'm talking.
Okay.
Then she broke into song. Jacob, you ever find the song?
I was able to find a little bit of her playing.
Because Mabel's working so intently on Holy Night, but she'll still be playing when we get back. Here's Kim Griffiths with the story.
And we went to the story. And then she kept going and going. And Daryl said, yeah, you have to stop her because she thinks we're still filming. And I go, she's going into another song. And Daryl's like, no, I think that's still Holy Night. So the two of us are standing there watching this woman blast her last breath into this harmonica. And she just kept going. I thought, how long is Oh Holy Night? I mean, it's not like the Hallelujah chorus where, you know, there's movements and it just takes forever, right? But this mm-hmm. woman, she did the extended dance version of Oh Holy Night on the harmonica. I didn't know how to stop her.
Well, so was she a fan, or did
no,
she know?
Just saw she camera, know? Saw light, and just walked right up. And, I'm going to do Oh Holy Night. I was like, huh? I'm going to play Oh Holy Night on the harmonica. It's like, we're in the middle of shooting it. I'm going to play Oh Holy Night. I was like, okay. And with that, she started licking the thing furiously. So I was like, okay, I'm going to, let's, the Daryl, let's do it.
89.
Okay. 89.
Was 99.
It at least near Christmas time?
I don't think so.
Wait a minute. Wait, this wasn't a Christmas theme? You weren't doing Christmas stuff, and she was walking around with her harmonica? That was her only song, was her only repertoire? Was Oh Holy Night, like, in October or August?
I don't think you... I mean, what was I going to do? Stop her in the middle, ask her if she's got something, you know, more contemporary?
Yeah. So do you take requests?
She's 89!
Okay.
Let her go. Jacob, don't you have isn't she doing it somewhere else? Oh, that's the last part of it.
That's
right?
All I had, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Give her a little bit more of it. You just here it is again. Pick up that last cut. Here it is.
Because Mabel's working so intently on Holy Night, but she'll still be playing when we get back. Here's Kim Griffiths with the story.
Yeah, and when when she finally finished, it was like 6 minutes, and she's all kind of winded and teetering on her little feet. And then as she starts to walk away, she looked back at me like I was supposed to, like, you know, give her $5 or something. I was like, I'm not going to get – that's, you know, Extortion. I put you on TV. That should be good enough for you. Move on.
Did she, was she a person that was doing her harmonica playing for money? Like she have a hat out?
No.
Or anything
you can tell,
like that?
No, no, no. I just think she's one of these people. She just happened to be in the hotel that time, and I think she just saw the camera and saw the, and just decided it was her time to come over and play Old Holy Night, like it was on some sort of schedule somewhere. Like, maybe you forgot, I'm next to go, doing Old Holy Night. You know, my father came to Seattle once, and he said, hey, I'll do your TV show with you. And I was like, oh my God. And he was so annoying because he kept going on and on. I go, Dad, these things are like 15 seconds, 18 seconds, 30 seconds, really, 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 really short. I don't have time for you to be doing this big thing about the Diamond Water Paradox and this other Milton Friedman crap. And he's like, hey. So I turned to Daryl and I said, Daryl, turn the red light off so he never knows when we're actually filming. So then we'd be standing there and my dad goes, so what are you going to do now? I said, oh, Jim Dever went down to the store that sells like all these things made out of driftwood. And my dad goes, well, that sounds boring. Who did that one? I said, Jim Dever. And with that, we'd go into the story. So every one of the intros, I made it sound as boring as possible. So I said, so Mimi Gann went to one of those cafes where you pay what you want. Huh? I said, Mimi Gann did that. What kind of show is this? That was every one of his intros is like that, right? He never knew when we were rolling, so everything was just like off the cuff. And he goes, does anybody watch this crap? I wish for God I could say I could have found that one. That was the best one. Yeah. Put your dad on TV. I put my mom on TV once to do a commercial for Pescatore Fish. Decided they were a big thing was going to be they were going to sell lasagna. This is going to be their thing. Like, why a fish restaurant is selling lasagna? Flew mom in from Philadelphia to play my mom talking about lasagna. She was so dehydrated because she never drank water, because that's no one drank water back then. And she didn't eat anything, so she couldn't even say the word pescatore.
Did she make a bologna? Did she make a bologna sandwich with the raisin out of the noodles?
Stuck that in her face. All right. Sorry. Chris Martin's anxious to talk.
Glad you got your parents in there. In, really?